Happy Halloween, my sweet strangelings. You didn't think we'd forget about you on our favorite day of the year, did you? I'm happy to present you a very special treat. A creepy story written and narrated by Jed Shepherd, creator of the terrifying movie Host. Jed will be joined by Something Scary podcast co-host Blair Bathory. So, want to hear something scary?
Sure you don't want a drink, honey?
She purrs as she pours herself the second gin and tonic of the evening, her hands conspicuously shaking. I politely refuse, apologise for arriving so late, and take stock of the items on the camphor wood table. A single sheet of premium A4 paper, a Bic Biro black ink, a CVS safety pin, a long white candle, a Zippo lighter, and my Sony WM-D6C recorder already wearing.
If you're hungry, I've left a raspberry pie cooling in the kitchen.
It's my absolute favourite, but I've already eaten. Thank you, Miss Joy. I confirm. She narrows her eyes at me playfully, and there's that Hollywood smile. The kind of smile that helped rack up 330 million plus opening weekends in a row. She really is the timeless beauty she's famed to be. Growing up, like a lot of people my age, I had Veronica Joy posters on my bedroom wall. I even had that corny, limited edition Veronica doll. You know, the one that says the catchphrase from Gorland. And now I'm here, at her Mulholland Drive mansion, interviewing her for my first Rolling Stone feature on the anniversary of her most popular film. Is that the real axe from Tales of the Executioner? I say, pointing at the prop on the wall like the complete fanboy I've been trying so hard to hide. And that's Steve Guttenberg's severed head from Slice, I add, positively vibrating. She giggles and takes a big sip of her Cambridge Distillery gin. I wish I could tell my 10-year-old self that one day I'd be sitting opposite the star of our favourite movies. I wouldn't believe myself.
Shall we get started, honey?
Miss Joy, you've been out of the spotlight for many years. Your fans want to know why you disappeared at your peak. I count myself among them. What happened?
You can call me Veronica, honey.
She comforts. Really?
Yes, sir. As long as I can call you whenever I like.
She laughs to herself and takes another swig. I laugh too. She's infectious. You must have had lots of offers after... I hesitate. Her expression encourages me to stop dead in my tracks. Her eyes wide as plates now. Miss Joy, are you okay?
Veronica.
She whispers.
The offers did come in. A lot of them. I tried, but my head wasn't right.
She's distracted by something over my shoulder, and I instinctively swivel. When I turn back, she's staring at her vintage watch with intent. I hear the whoosh of the air from her sharp intake of breath. Veronica, we don't have to do this. We can stop. I can go home.
No. It's about time I told my story. It might prevent people.
Prevent people from asking you why you stopped acting?
Prevent them from performing the ritual.
But The Flicker Man was my favorite movie. You probably get this all the time, but The Flicker Man was my favorite film growing up. I used to pester my mum every weekend to run it from Blockbuster. She let me, because she said that image of you on the cover reminded her of the golden age actresses she grew up watching.
Your mother is very sweet, but it's all airbrushed, honey.
She looks at me solemnly and puts a hand on top of mine.
You'll tell people what you see, everything you hear.
Veronica explains through tears that the rumors of problems on the set of The Flicker Man were true. They were all true. There were indeed some gruesome accidents. A producer was found ripped apart, his insides on the outside. They blamed a mountain lion, but I've never known a big cat to pick a state-of-the-art home security system and leave without a trace. The costume lady was discovered by neighbours, her eyes and tongue plucked out with surgical precision. She remained alive for 3 days, but there was no getting through to her to find out exactly what happened. The writer-director and Italian auteur, Zetico Carabello, really did commit suicide days after the shooting wrapped. The story of him breaking into the studio offices to destroy the footage was also confirmed true by numerous sources.
I need people to know the consequences. I need them to know that he never stops. That remake can't happen. You don't need me to tell you how to do this, right?
She asks with hope. Right, I reassure. This ain't my first rodeo. This was my first rodeo. I'm a little scared, but with an equal level of excitement. She watches as I scrawl my name on the white paper and place it neatly on the table. I take the safety pin and prick my index finger. She winces. I press and hold until a droplet appears on the surface, and I cigarette tap my blood into the paper. I take the Zippo, a crew gift from the Flickerman rap party, and light the candle, which I place on top of the crimson stained paper.
You don't mind me not taking part, do you?
Of course not, I comfort. She smiles and lifts a towel from the bucket of water that's been by her side since my arrival. The towel is dripping wet and crystalline white. This is just like that bit in the movie. I never really knew the science behind it, but it didn't matter. It was cool.
See you in a few hours.
She announces, misty-eyed, as she places the wet towel over her head, steadily dripping water down her vintage Chanel dress. Veronica? I mumble. She can't hear me now, her body static as if paused in time, a metaphysical barrier between time and space. I look up at one of the clocks in the room. Was there always this many clocks in here? It's almost midnight. As all fans of the Flickerman know, this is the only time he can be summoned. Why you'd want to summon him is a question a lot of people have asked over the years. I've always thought that if you could prove the existence of the supernatural by performing one ritual, wouldn't you do it? Just to know for sure. I pick up the candle and look directly into the flame. I whisper his name, watch my breath buckle the fire, making it twist and jump. As the clock strikes midnight, I hold the fire to the corner of the paper. I watch as my name turns brown, then black, then disappears in smoke and black ash. I throw the smouldering corner still in my hand onto the floor and watch as it moves of its own volition, spinning and flickering like the candle in my other hand. I always cringe at the specificity of this ritual. It seemed like shoddy writing from Caraballo, but now everything seems so important. I feel the air in the room changed, like gravity glitched. I gradually turn, first seeing Veronica frozen in place with a wet towel over her head, looking much like the limited edition doll I cherished. And then, in my peripheral, I see an abominable figure. I twist fully now and see a man with his back to me, hunched over and standing directly in the middle of the room. He looks wrong, even from this distance. His edges are blurry and he starts to turn, warping the air around him. His terrifying visage flickers as if a couple of frames are missing from the 24. I have seconds to move. I open the living room door and look out into the house in front of me. I now understand why she lives here. It's big enough to walk around all night until it's safe to stop. I can last until the sanctuary of 3:30 a.m., no problem. I once did a midnight marathon for charity when I was 18. I still have some of that muscle memory, I'm sure. I let out a sigh and almost blow out the candle, glimmering in my unsteady hand. It's then that I suddenly realise that I've left the Zippo on the table. There won't be a second chance at this. I take a final glance at Veronica, still and safe under the towel. The man in the middle of the room contorts to meet my gaze. I can barely focus as he takes his first ungodly step towards me. Flicker, flicker, flicker. His eyes too large, mine burning from the sulphur in the air, his movement alien. I follow the rules and start walking into the dark, the candle precarious in my clenched fist. I walk for an hour through flowery bedrooms, walk-in wardrobes, marble bathrooms, and whatever a smoking room is. My hand perches above the candle flame, protecting it and my life. I feel comfort in the heat on my palm, but the opposite from his breath in the back of my neck the whole way, heavy and wet. I come across a brightly lit hallway with framed movie posters on either side. An oversized classic film poster at the top of the hallway hangs with a tagline, "Don't stop moving and never ever let the candle burn out," above a blood red logo. I've watched this movie dozens of times. I know the rules better than anyone. I just never thought I'd get the chance to test it for real. I'm smiling through the peril. This is what I wanted. I guard the flame with one hand and push the door open with my tired feet. My footsteps echo and a clock tick-tocks. The kitchen, airy and cold in the twilight. I sense it behind me, and it's then I see my own breath in the air. I look out the large kitchen window, wide open with a beautiful looking pie sitting under it, his breath on my spine. The cool summer breeze blows raspberry notes across the room. My absolute favourite.
Thanks so much for listening. Like and share if this video gave you the chills. And don't forget to subscribe and turn on the bell for notifications. And did you know you can listen to Something Scary podcast right here on Snarled or on Spotify or wherever you listen to your podcasts? And if you'd like to submit a story, send me an email at somethingscary@snarled.com. Thanks so much and see you next time.